Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
This is the Witness History Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Viv Jones. Genocide is widely understood to be the world's gravest crime. The crime itself, the mass extermination of a people or a group, has an all too long history. But before the 1950s, there was no international law against it and no way of holding its perpetrators to account. In fact, before the 1940s, it was an atrocity without even a name or a definition. Today, the story of the man who coined the term genocide and fought for decades to create a law that could prevent it.
I can just see him in front of me, slightly stooped. He never sat down. He never sat down. He never smiled. Same threadbare suit, which had seen better days in its life. And he was grabbing delegates in between meetings, coloring them and saying, "Please vote for the Genocide Convention. You will be saving lives." My name is Lily Aylon. I'm 95 years old.
In the years after the Second World War, Lily Aylon was a young journalist working for an American newspaper.
The National Jewish Post. I was covering the United Nations for them.
It was here at the newly created UN in New York that she encountered the Polish lawyer Rafał Lemkin. He cut a lonely, shabby figure, but he was in the process of making a remarkable contribution to history.
I was sad for him. I wish I could do something for him.
It was a common sight to see Lemkin lurking in the corridors of the UN, buttonholing delegates, asking them to join his campaign.
People rejected him and didn't want to talk to him. I couldn't understand why people were so unkind to him, because I knew what his message was. He said, "Please sign my genocide convention." That was important to him. Nothing else.
Rafał Lemkin was born in 1900.
In some isolated small farm in Poland.
He was a bright student, and his gift for languages won him a place at university in Lwów. While he was studying, he began following an unusual murder trial. It would set him off on his life's mission. In 1921, an Ottoman Empire official called Talat Pasha, who had overseen the near-complete eradication of the empire's Armenian population, possibly over a million people, was shot dead in the street in Berlin. The gunman was a young Armenian. At his trial, he said he was avenging the death of his mother.
Dr. Lemkin, could you give us a little background on how you came to be interested in this genocide fight originally?
Lemkin later spoke about the case in a 1949 TV interview.
I thought that crime should not be punished by the victims, but should be punished by court, by international law.
Lemkin transferred to Lvov's law school. There, his professors explained to him that mass killings carried out by governments against their own citizens were considered a matter of national sovereignty, not something international law could intervene in. Lemkin found this impossible to accept. After he graduated, he began working as a prosecutor, but spent all his spare time trying to think up legal tools that could prevent what had happened to the Armenians from happening again.
I became interested in genocide because it happened so many times. I said to myself, being a lawyer, I'm going to do something about it. And I submitted a draft convention to a conference of legal experts.
In the early 1930s, he began presenting his work to leading lawyers at international conferences. But in those interwar years, European nations were wary of getting involved in each other's affairs. Lemkin's ideas were dismissed.
No action was taken, but Hitler took action, and that precipitated conscience of the world to do something about it.
He was a Polish Jew. What happened to him when the Nazis came to power?
He escaped to Sweden.
Lemkin found himself a refugee, fleeing the kind of persecution he'd been trying to prevent. From Sweden, he made a perilous journey to America alone. But in order to persuade the world's leaders to act, the atrocities he was trying to outlaw needed a name.
The word genocide is his invention. It stems from genus, people, in Greek, and side is killing in Latin.
His definition of genocide encompassed the mass killing of a particular religious, national, or ethnic group, and any attempt to harm or destroy them, including by preventing births or removing children. After the war, Lemkin travelled to Nuremberg, where Nazi officials were being put on trial. He pushed for the charges against them to include organising genocide. He secured a small victory when his new word was adopted by the prosecutors.
Genocide, the extermination of whole categories of human beings, was a foremost instrument of the Nazi doctrine.
But he was bitterly disappointed that no one was charged using the term. A far greater personal tragedy greeted him at Nuremberg. It was here that he finally got news that 49 members of his family, including his parents, had perished in the Holocaust.
His nephew was the only living survivor. He came and told him that nobody was left of his family.
More determined than ever, Lemkin turned his attention to the newly created United Nations. He drafted a convention and began his one-man lobbying campaign to convince delegates their countries should commit to outlawing genocide worldwide.
This was obsessive with him. He had no other life. He wasn't married. He was offered lecture jobs by Yale University. He turned it down. He had no money. He had to ask his friends to lend him money to have lunch. It was just an obsessiveness. He felt he had to succeed. He had to push this through.
Decades of work finally paid off. In 1951, after Lemkin had helped persuade 25 nations to ratify the convention, the crime of genocide was officially introduced into international law. Lemkin continued working tirelessly to persuade more countries to sign the convention. Today, 152 UN member states are signatories.
Out of 193, which is not a bad score. And the remarkable success that he achieved was that he did all this without any institution behind him or organization. And then once when I heard somebody say to him, "And you did all this single-handed?" And Lemkin showed him both his hands and said, "No, with both of these." So he had a sense of humor, too.
Lemkin's efforts left him exhausted, impoverished, and in poor health. In 1959, he died of a heart attack. He was 59 years old.
There is no memorial for this man. Nothing whatsoever, except for a simple gravestone in Mount Chevron Cemetery in Queens. 10 times he was proposed for a Nobel Prize. Well, Lemkin never got the Nobel. But genocide continues to plague the world. So what has Lemkin's work achieved? What did the Genocide Convention accomplish? Well, it defined evil and brought the concept to the consciousness of governments. It served as the foundation for the International Criminal Court, which has already indicted 44 dictators and accessories for their crimes against humanity. He wanted to change the world and make it a better place to live in. And in a way, he succeeded.
Lily Aylon was speaking to me, Viv Jones, for Witness History.